Good evening again. We continue our series meditating on the Book of Lamentations and asking what does it mean to grieve and lament in a way that both honors the pain but also is productive. And to get at the readings for tonight, I'd like to make an observation that human beings communicate. That's just what we do. There's kind of an old joke that goes like this. There's a fiery pastor who gives barn-burning, you know, hour-long sermons, and you're welcome because I don't do that. I don't have that kind of energy. And he would always conclude these messages saying, I'm going to now get into my car and go off and serve the poor and feed the hungry. Then he'd get into his car and leave to supposedly set some sort of self-righteous example. Of course, what he was actually doing was going to play golf because his clubs were in his trunk. And eventually, the angels in heaven get tired of this. And so they go to God and say, hey, this hypocrisy is ridiculous. Can you do something about this? God says, all right, I'll take care of it. So the next Sunday, he gets up, yammers on, yells for about an hour, and says, I'm off to go serve the poor. You should be doing that too. And he gets into his car and goes and drives to the course. Gets to the first tee, it's par four, just smacks the ball already onto the green, and he gets an eagle. And the rest of his day proceeds like this. He has the best day of golf in his life. And the angels go to God, and they say, oh, I thought you were going to take care of this. And God says, yeah, who's he going to tell? And I realize it makes a joke unfunny when you analyze it, but the reason why that works is that would be truly miserable. We have to communicate that. We have to. It's just part of who we are. So much so that it's kind of common advice to give to like newlywed couples or something like that, like always be communicating. And the advice is well meant. What it kind of boils down to is, you know, always being reaching out and trying to connect with your spouse and all that good stuff. But there's a psychologist that he's since died, but that I really liked that had some interesting thoughts on this. He liked to push back on it. Not because it was bad advice, but because his point was, you're human. You can't not communicate. Everything you do is communication in some way. Even if you are silent in the presence of your spouse, you're communicating something. The question is just what? And are you meaning to communicate that? And you probably are, it's just you don't realize it. Because people communicate. I mean, we all know, yeah, pretty much, yeah, everyone here would know. You know, as you're raising young children, there's a pocket of age where we all know if they are not starting to communicate in certain ways, we panic, and we should, and we get medical attention quickly because something's gone really wrong. So then what happens if we are stuck, where we have things to communicate, and yet we can't, because nobody's listening? That's when, especially if the things that we want to share are dark and difficult, it tends to just amplify the grief or the pain. As a pastor, you learn pretty fast if you don't learn it in seminary, which I don't even know what we learned in seminary at this point. That if somebody that you are caring for as a pastor is struggling, they encounter like a really hard diagnosis, they encounter some kind of tragedy, grief, something like that. And especially in the context of like an illness, that there's really only so much you can do. I mean, I can pray for them, I can talk with them, but I mean, my time is limited. And if they need medical help, you need the other Robinson for that. He's the doctor, not me. That said, the thing you look for is a support system. And you figure it out pretty fast that if they have a decent set of like really close friends, solid, dependable family, a good community, neighbor, something like that, that yeah, it's gonna be really hard, but they're gonna be okay. And I've experienced this more times than I can count. Like you see a whole bunch of people, you know, they're helping them out, caring for them. I already know I don't really have to worry about them, because that's the best possible situation for them. So the first thing that I'd like to point out to you in our reading from Lamentations is in verse 12, when the lamenter, who's kind of got this really interesting perspective of like a person who is grief-stricken but also speaks kind of on behalf of Jerusalem. It's a multi-layered thing. But he says, is this nothing to you, all you who pass by? Look and see. Is there any pain like mine which was dealt out to me? That line has been bouncing in my head. Is there any pain like mine? Really? That's where you're going with that? The answer is yes. Like, no discussion. I mean, this was in the wake of the Babylonians sacking Jerusalem in the year 586. This was a period of time that was brutal beyond comprehension, especially for modern people. Yeah, there's been a lot of pain like that person's. Almost everybody, to be perfectly honest, life was hard. And what this tells me is that this person, in their attempt to deal with their grief, feels utterly alone. There's nobody to talk to, nobody to communicate with. And when you take grief and loneliness and combine them, you get a very, very dangerous combination. That's why the theme for tonight is the idea of addressing God, speaking to God, prayer, among other things, which he does. He eventually does in verse 20, but we'll get there in a minute. A professor of mine, actually at seminary, so I did learn something. Cool. Now that I think about it. In a conversation about prayer, but it applies just as easily to the expression of grief and lament. He says, are we just screaming into the void, or is there somebody actually tugging on the other end of the line? Now, obviously, as Christians, we would go with the latter. But that actually matters. The fact that God is present, and that was one of the points from last week, is that God is present. His presence is promised in your grief and suffering. What is never promised is that he will just pull you out of it or make it go away. What you want there is Superman, not God. And in keeping with that idea that God is present no matter what we start to see trickling through as Lamentations unfolds, that he begins speaking to God. And that seems to change things. It doesn't fix anything. And spoiler alert, Lamentations does not resolve, which I very much appreciate the wisdom of that. But it changes things. If you know that you truly are not alone, God stands with you. God has a habit of standing with you. If you endured the many years of Sunday school like I did, you would of course know from the book of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Three entered the furnace, but four stood. That's the point of that story. God stands with you. And so the reason why that can be so helpful is that God invites that kind of communication. I mean, and that would make sense if he made us and we are fundamentally wired to communicate. Then, of course, he would expect communication from us. Honest communication. There's no need to sugarcoat with God. He's quite literally heard it all. And so, as he continues, as our lamenter continues, and he starts after the bit of histrionics and exaggeration of like, oh, is there any pain like mine? Ah, give me a break. The Babylonians sacked a lot of cities, by the way. You can start to see, it comes in the second half of verse 12 and starts to make other appearances. Like in verse 18, he says, the Lord is just, for I have rebelled against his command. Listen, all you people, look at my pain. Once he starts invoking the Lord, he goes deeper. Notice that the perspective shifts. It's no longer just about the pain. It's about the reason for the pain. It allows the lamenter to go deeper and darker. Because not only has he experienced just unimaginable grief, he's also recognizing it was my fault. A little reminder of this yesterday. I teach technology to the middle school kids at our school. And we're kind of entering a unit where I'm teaching them about like electricity and how electricity can be used and manipulated and to, you know, light things up and dim things and mix colors and I've been taking them to like more complex things, like using microcontrollers, which are kind of like tidy little computers, and you can program them and do things, and so you know you control the electricity flow, which creates a signal that gets processed, and blah blah blah. It doesn't matter anyway. I built a bunch of these like little units to demonstrate that with these really cool microcontrollers, and I did this while I was watching curling. Like you do. Paying attention close enough, which is probably not good with a soldering iron. And so I know everything about this board. I've made them all. And as I was getting everything ready to teach the class, I remember saying, oh yeah, you know what? I didn't cover up that lead, did I? Because there's a power source for the microcontroller, and then there's much higher voltage for this LED strip, and those cannot meet. If they do, bad things happen. And they met as I was putting one of them together. And I hear this boom, pop, and then smoke fills my office a little bit, and it stank for like an hour. And so if you were like in the halls at about 11:45 yesterday, you heard me slam my fist on the desk and go, no! and in a second, I knew exactly what happened. Because I made it. I knew everything about this thing. I knew exactly what happened. And the funny thing is when things go wrong, it's very natural to try and find something to blame. Like, oh, the voltage regulator for the microcontroller failed. That's happened before. That's not what happened. Or, you know, you want to make excuses for something, but nope. I knew that lead was bare. And then things get real quiet because I realize this is 100% my fault. I did this. That's what's happening to our narrator here. as he's starting to open up and address God, recognizing that God is still present in some way. He's able to go deeper into his pain. And if you're not aware, if you find yourself in immense pain and it is your fault, it takes a lot to get to that point where you can be honest about it. We can start to see the process of grief and the effect of lament right before our eyes, already in chapter 1, when he gets to that deeply uncomfortable kind of quiet moment of, this was my fault. So he continues. He has the audacity to say that the Lord is just. I say audacity because I'm sure to him that was a hard pill to swallow. And then in verse 20, he again goes, Lord, see how I am in distress. I am churning within. I am broken, or my heart is broken, for I have been very rebellious. Notice that there's already a different voice there. It's no longer the histrionic, oh, there's never been pain like this before. But instead, he's actually be able, in addressing God, recognizing that in some way, even though the temple is gone and everything he knows and loved is destroyed, God is still present. And he can start holding the tension between, this is my fault, and my heart is broken. Now, when we experience grief in our lives, which is guaranteed because you're human, things aren't always necessarily your fault. In fact, most of the grief that you experience, I would think, is not your fault. Sometimes it is. But nevertheless, you start seeing the sense, and it's going to become apparent more and more as we go through Lamentations, that the more that he's able to address God himself, recognizing that he is in fact not alone, recognizing that he still has the freedom and I would say even the invitation for him to lay his sorrows and his grief on the altar of God, that it becomes easier to name his pain. The pain that he expresses becomes clearer. And when things are clearer, they're maybe not easier to deal with, but they're easier to address. Now, because this is Lent, we are making our way toward an evening where Jesus has dinner for the last time with his disciples, knowing that his betrayer is sitting at the table with him, which will take us to a garden where Jesus prays. And he is stricken with grief because he knows what's coming, and he's alone. His friends can't hang. And what does he do when he's alone? He brings his sorrow before God. And he speaks very frankly, very openly, honestly with God. He says, if there is another way, please take this cup from me. Given everything you know about everything that has led to that moment, that is an audacious thing to pray. That is the kind of thing you pray to God when prayer and conversation and just addressing God in general is so core to your being. And so, draw the contrast between Jesus, who comes before God alone, asking him to take this cup, and we all know that the answer is going to be no. And yet he is resigned to the fact that this is going to happen when he says, and yet not my will. Contrast that with the narrator of Lamentations as he's still struggling, still fighting with himself, trying to make sense of everything that has happened, but has moments where he's able to get deeper, get closer to the actual pain. And I think we can say, without any doubt, Jesus seems to know what he is doing. He seems to know how to enter into that pain, to address and converse with God the Father, who is about to refuse to rescue him, and who is going to redeem that pain into something wonderful. It seems that Jesus knows something we don't. Amen. As you are able, please rise.